In this lesson, we'll formally introduce the topic of cascading style sheets. We'll talk about the purpose of CSS, how to define styles in line, on page, and in an external file. We'll examine the most common selectors and briefly overview some advanced CSS3 selectors that have just been added to get to portions of the HTML5 document that we want to apply a style to. We'll look at both normal CSS3 syntax as well as some special syntax used in special situations. And then I think this is probably one of the most important parts about understanding CSS, the order in which the web browser will interpret CSS styles that have been defined when there are selectors that are in conflict or that when they overlap. Which one will win? Which one will get its style applied? And what is that order of precedence? Okay, so let's start at the beginning, the purpose of cascading style sheets. I've repeated it over and over up to this point in the series, so it shouldn't be much of a surprise. The purpose of CSS is to apply visual styles to the HTML5 code that you write and affect the presentation of the content. A style is simply a collection of name value pairs representing a visual attribute of a given HTML5 element. Could be the typeface, the font size or color, the background color or an image used for the background, the amount of padding or margin for a given area, and much more. So we're going to examine many of these common properties that you can modify in CSS throughout the remainder of this series. So a style, you've seen it before, it looks something like this. In this particular case, we have several different parts to our style. First of all, is the selector. We are selecting, in this case, the H1 element, every H1 element in the document. The styling will be applied to all elements that match that requirement, namely all H1 elements. Secondly, we have a set of curly braces that kind of define the body of the style that we'll define. And third, inside of the curly braces, there's a collection of name value pairs that are separated by semicolons. And then finally, in the innermost parts on each line, you see a combination of the CSS property name, colon, and then the value you're setting it to. And so the colon is the separator between the property name and the value you're setting it to. All right, so cascading style sheets. The word cascading describes the nature of how styles are applied. There could be many style sheets, or at least many styles that are applied that affect a given HTML5 element on your web page. And there's this natural order in how they're interpreted and applied when there's a collision between the two styles. Again, let me push that deeper down into this lesson. We'll talk about that order of precedence in a little bit. But before we leave this topic of the basic format of a style definition, there's a number of common conventions that I've seen where developers and designers have formatted their cascading style sheet styles. And I actually prefer one of the more verbose styles, only because I'm teaching and it's easier to point things out. First, there's what I would describe as the clearest way to write your CSS, where you separate everything out kind of on its own line. Some people even prefer to add one more space between the style selector, in this case H1, and that opening curly brace. And then there's some people on the other end of the spectrum who prefer to keep everything on one line. Now, it's important to note in HTML5 and in CSS, white space is ignored. So when you do layout and you do indentation, it is purely for your own readability of the code. In fact, some designers would prefer to keep, like I said, what you see right here, the entire style defined on a single line so that they can at least look down the left-hand column and see all the selectors to find the one that they want to work instead of weeding through bodies mixed along inside, you know, with the actual selector names. And that's fine. Some designers are particular about the order of the CSS properties that are listed in each given style. Now, there are a few cases where there's a technical reason to keep a specific order. However, in most cases, it's up to you to decide how to approach this. One of the most common is to keep the properties in alphabetical order. Now, that's fine. I'm kind of lazy. I'll probably just wind up you know, typing something and leaving it at it as is and not kind of going back and combing through my code and making sure that every property name is in alphabetical order. But if I had a client or a team that used this as a standard, certainly that's something I would be aware of. So my advice to you is take a look on the internet. There's plenty of opinions about which styles to choose and why. My advice is just to pick one style and go with it. Be consistent and never don't look back. Don't obsess about that. Okay, we've up to this point been using an external style sheet when we worked in lesson three, and there's basically three different ways to define styles. The only one I really recommend is to use an external style sheet when you're working with a large project or a real project. So you'll see me in the next couple lessons use inline styles, meaning that you can add the style attribute to any given HTML5 element like you see listed here. So I have an H1 with a style equals and then a number of CSS property names, colon, the value I'm setting it to, semicolon, and then another set of name value pairs. Hopefully you'll immediately recognize the problems with this approach. First and foremost, you're mixing in the HTML5 structure and semantic meaning of the H1 with the styling and presentation of the CSS. And secondly, it makes styling less portable. You can't easily take these styles you define out and put them in and use them across your entire project or multiple projects. So if you ever need to redesign your entire website, you're going to have to go in and touch every single web page. Clearly, that's an advantage to using the external style sheet instead of embedding the styles directly into the style attribute. Furthermore, as we'll see in a little while, styles that are defined inline take precedence over any other style. So if you were in the future to define an external style sheet for the page, but you left in the styles on a tag-by-tag basis, those styles would win out over the ones that you defined in an external file. Okay, something to be aware of. So the second way to define CSS styles is on page. And so if you watch the previous lesson in lesson 11, if you take a look at the before, I did some work and I said, hey, just ignore this. But you can see what I did here. I created a style tag, opening and closing style tag, inside of the head section of my HTML page. And then we did all of our work down here in this form area. But here I was able to define a number of styles just on the page. Now, okay, the good news is that we're able to pull this out and I could easily take this out and put it into its own document. But as it exists right now, it's still problematic because the presentation code is still mixed in with the HTML5 structural code. So at any rate, it's a step in the right direction, but still the best way and the approach that I would highly, highly, highly recommend that you take throughout the rest of your career is to put all your CSS into one or more external files dedicated to cascading style sheets. And so in this way, you can reuse the styles across your entire website or utilize it in multiple websites. If you need to make sweeping changes to your website, you merely need to change the CSS in one place, and then the changes will propagate everywhere where that external CSS file is used. So to include an external CSS file, you use the link element. And we've already seen this in our lesson three, right? Link rel equals style sheet, href equals styles.css, type equals text/css, media equals all. So what do these attributes mean? I think we already talked about them at the time. Just a quick reminder, the rel attribute is the relationship, the link's relationship to the current document. In this case, it's a style sheet. Secondly, the location is the href. So where do you find this? I've kept the styles in the same directory, but we talked about URLs when we were talking about anchor tags and all the many different ways, whether absolute or relative, ways of defining some sort of reference to an external file. Okay, and then the type. And the type we set to text/css, we're just instructing the browser how it should interpret this type of file. In this case, it's going to be ASCII text, and it's going to contain CSS, so get ready for it, okay? And then finally, media, and that's to be, we set it in this case to all. We've seen it set to screen before as well. When we use the term all, we're basically saying that this these styles that are defined in this section of CSS are to be used on all screen sizes and all devices, but we can target specific media for certain styles. And that approach is the backbone to the notion of responsive web design, which I'll talk about briefly at the very end of the series, but this media attribute will take on an increasingly important role in modern web development as time goes on. So just be aware of that. So the link is one way that we can reference an external CSS document. Another way to do it is to use an import statement inside of a CSS file itself. So we could use this inside of any CSS file at the very top, the at symbol import, and then a URL inside of those open and close parentheses. And why would you ever want to use this? Well, if you had styles that were specific to different page types, but all the page types had the same basic styles defined in the CSS in a main style.css file, then it could become very useful. So you think of using import as a means of establishing a dependency between style sheets. And frankly, I'm not going to use this, so you can largely ignore it through the remainder of this series. But if you go to work in certain environments, that is a tool that could be used to manage large style sheets, break them up by page type, but they can all reference a common CSS file where the majority of the styles are defined. Okay. So two things that I want to interject at this point, and then we're going to get our hands dirty writing some CSS of our very own. First thing to keep in mind before we continue is that the web browser has its own built-in style sheet. You might say, well, wait a second, what built-in style sheet? I think I've alluded to this already once or twice. So we've been working the entire time with a built-in style sheet. Whenever we create HTML, Internet Explorer has to display it somehow. So that's why in lesson two, whenever we opened up, let's look at our after folder here. We open up our lesson 02. How is it that the H1 is larger than the H2 and that the paragraphs have just this much margin above and below it? And how is it that, let's see, don't we have, these list items here, how are they rendered using numbers as opposed to having nothing at all? Well, that's because there's a default style sheet, and when you define styles using cascading style sheets, you're overriding the default style sheet. And so later on at the very end of the series, I'll point you to a couple of reset style sheets that will override all the settings for the browser so that you can start from scratch, or at least you can get to a baseline. Now, some designers say you should never use somebody else's work. You should look through it and make it your own. So I'll repeat that caution later on, but I just wanted to say that now when we're talking about reset.css, which is a common style sheet that's used out on the internet, just be aware of what it's attempting to do, and that is to override the default style sheet so it gets every web browser kind of back into just the most basic rendering of content so that you can build on top of it. So the second thing I wanted to talk about before we continue on is that users can define their own personal style sheets that'll be applied to every web page. And I imagine that very few users consciously think of it in these terms. However, if they ever tell their web browser to use a larger font in their web browser, let's see where that is. Yeah, so under text size, I can use largest, and if I am counting on my font sizes to be a specific size based on a specific browser's rendering, I have to keep in mind, like in this particular case, by using a larger font, it pushed some of the content onto the next line. Now, the designer of this web page may have realized this and just decided not to worry about it because most people don't mess with these settings, but I've had people tell me, hey, your web page doesn't look quite right in my web browser, and then I'll go off searching for the problem for days and days, only to realize that they have set their fonts or made some other changes that would affect the layout, and in my particular case, everything was cattywampus. So the moral of the story is, when it comes to designing web pages, trying to build the perfect design that's going to work equally well in everybody's web browser is a fool's errand. It cannot be done, at least I can't do it, okay? I can get close, but I can't guarantee it 100% of the time. I can get most cases, and then I guess everybody else is on their own. I don't get crazy about it. Okay, so let's move forward. We're going to get our hands dirty in code. I want to point out a couple of things that I may or may not use while I'm coding. For example, the use of code comments. If you're familiar with other software development, you can use in C Sharp, for example, two forward slashes or a forward slash and an asterisk to create a comment section. That allows me to get rid of certain code temporarily by commenting it out, or to write notes to myself that are not compiled. And you can do the same thing with cascading style sheets. So here you see a simple comment. I open the comment with a forward slash asterisk, and then end the comment with a asterisk forward slash. And I could wrap those two around large passages of CSS in order to remove them from the web browser's rendering temporarily during development time. So just be aware of that. Okay, so now let's move on to CSS selectors. If you recall from earlier, CSS selector is how you attach a style to one or more HTML5 elements. Now, we've already seen how tags, like the H1 tag, can be used as a CSS selector. However, there are many different CSS selectors available, and we'll look at those in just a moment. So in addition to using tags as a selector, the most common CSS selectors are classes and IDs. If you recall from much earlier in the series, I said there were global attributes that could be used on all HTML5 elements, like the ID and the class. The ID was a unique identifier that we could optionally add each HTML5 element that we wanted to access for the purpose of styling or scripting. Classes were attributes that allowed us to further refine the semantic meaning of a given element. So we said at that time that we could apply a class to an element such as red text in order to make with the intent of making whatever that class was applied to red. But a better semantically correct class name might be important message, and then style the text to be red, okay, using a red font. So now we can see the real value of using those global attributes of ID and class. They become hooks that we can use in CSS to style precisely what we want. It also gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility. Take the class, for instance. A class, let's say important message, could be used across many different tags, not just a paragraph or the H1. So we can apply a style to many different tags, regardless of which type of element it is, as long as they share the same class in common, all right? Likewise, we can get very specific, targeting a style at an individual element on our web page by creating a style for individual IDs. And there are so many combinations, it'll make your head spin, okay? And we're not going to be able to cover them all. One other thing I wanted to point out, because we didn't talk about it at the time, but whenever you define a class for a given HTML5 element, you can actually define multiple classes, like so. In this case, we have a div tag. The class equals, and I just created three arbitrary classes, my class 1, my class 2, my class 3, with spaces in between each of them. And that basically says that it is a member of all three classes, or that all three classes apply to this particular div tag. Okay, so what I want to do right now is actually, I want to turn this off, or back to medium. Okay, so now for the fun part. You should be able to download a folder called Lesson 12 from wherever you downloaded this video or where you're currently watching this video. Inside of that zip file, there should be three folders, a before, after, and a work folder. What I want you to do is go to the before folder and copy the two files that are there and put them in the work folder so that we don't mess up the originals here. And what I want to do is just double click on the lesson 12 in the work folder so you can see that we have a web page with a bunch of nonsensical lorem ipsum text, which is, it can be generated, it's just a bunch of Latin, pig Latin, I'm not sure exactly which. And it's just marked up with a bunch of HTML it's more fun to look at the source code for this particular file because you can see things like span tags added into the middle of it with classes. There's articles that contain paragraphs with IDs, with class references. There's spans that have title attributes. And we'll use all of these to make different selections inside of the document. You can see there's an unordered list with some text inside of it. And I'm going to go ahead and minimize that. Then we can take a look at the styles, which is blank, and it's a fertile playground for us to play in. So let's begin by styling up our H1 just to quickly demonstrate all selectors. We're familiar with this one. In this case, I'm going to select font family as Arial, and we'll set the color to purple. And let's go ahead and save that, and then apply it to our style sheet. And can see we've changed both the font and the color of our H1. Great. Now, also want to select all the HTML5 elements that share the same class. And I happen to have a class used in a couple different spots called important. There's some paragraphs and some span tags that have important, and now we're going to make them pop out with the color red. So let's do that and refresh our document. You can see we have a span here that's got a class of important and then two paragraphs at the very bottom of our page that have the class important. Or we can reference individual elements by referencing their ID instead of the attributes. So we have an ID of one of the paragraphs called some such, because I couldn't think of a good name for it. And we'll set its color to blue. Let's see how that affects it. Alright, so you can see this entire paragraph now is set to blue text. So those are your three primary selectors, but there are tons of ways to combine these. For example, let's look for just the span.important, so we don't affect all spans, just the ones that are important, the spans that are important, and not all important classes, just those that belong to the span. And we'll color those in a dark red instead of just red. So now we should override that, and you can see if you look at your version of this, it'll look, this red will look darker than this red. Okay, it at least it does on my screen. And then additionally, what we can do in terms of combinations of things, and let me just make some space here, is to define a style that applies to multiple tags, and so we can use a comma for that. So like H1, H2, H3, comma. And then p.important, and we'll set the margin left to 50 pixels, and let's save that. So now I would expect everything that is an H1, H2, H3, or these paragraphs that have a class of important, let's see what happens. They're going to move over to the right 50 pixels, and you see it worked. Great. All right, and then there are things like pseudo tags, which they have this interesting little syntax. For example, we talked about the anchor tag and its various states and how to reset those states, but we can style those states as well. So if you have a tag that's been visited, you can style it separately than a tag that, for example, hasn't been. Here, let me start up here with a... So this is a tag that's not been, a hyperlink that's not been clicked yet. So we'll go text decoration none, and then we'll color it green, yellow, which is one of the default colors. Then we will go h.hover, and we'll merely add underline, and then for those that have been visited, we'll color them dark green so you know that you've already clicked that link. All right, so let's see this in action if I type that all in correctly. Let's refresh our web page. All right, so now you can see that I've already visited this link. Let me go and to my internet options, and let's delete my browsing history, and then click OK, and then shut it down, and then open it back up. And now it should look fresh again. There we go. So very bright green, this yellow, green-yellow color. And when I click on it to go to the page, in this case, wikipedia.org, we come back and it's now a dark green. Notice also when I hover my mouse cursor over it, a underline will appear. I'm not sure this is a great usability choice. It's not obvious that this is a hyperlink because it's missing its underline, but it's certainly a trick that some people use and they feel that they can style their web pages that way, and that's how they do it. All right, and then there are some new CSS level 3 selectors that are awfully funky, especially those of us who've been doing this for a while. So, for example, this is kind of cool. So every paragraph's first letter, I want to style it differently. And I'm going to go font size, and we'll make it 3 times the size of a normal font. So let's do that and refresh. So now, whoops, let me look at my H3EM. There we go. Now let's refresh. There we go. And notice there's this big leading character on every paragraph. Okay. Kind of cool. You can also use a before and after, so we can select the space before and after. I'll just show the before article before. So in that space that's immediately before the article, I'm going to use this other special new thing called content, and I'm just going to put some a line of asterisks. And I could also do the same thing with after, to add some content after whatever it is. So some people use it to put decorative fonts around divs and things of that nature. It's definitely a good approach for that. And you can see around before both of the articles that I have defined, we now have these asterisks. Okay, so a good way of inserting content. If you wanted to insert a URL, you could just go content URL. L and then do that, and then put the actual URL here, hqkillin, or to whatever .gif, okay. But for now, let's just go back to just a bunch of asterisks. Okay, so next up, the next pseudo tag that's been added with CSS level 3, first of type. So the very first paragraph in each section or each article is what's implied here, is that we're going to give it a margin right of 200 pixels. So we will indent it in from the right-hand side, not make it stretch the entire length of, or width rather, of the web page. And you can see it indented it in dramatically for each first of type paragraph. Okay. Let's move on to these list items, because there's some cool things we can do with these as well. Or anything where we have this parent-child relationship. So in this case, let's look for those list items that are the first child. And if you are a first child list item, then we're going to style you, style your font as an italic. And as we would expect, this very first list item is italicized. We can do the same thing with the last child. And so we'll go font weight bold. And again, we haven't talked about any of these properties. That's what the remainder of the series is for. Right now, we're only focusing on these selectors, okay? Just to make sure you understand, I'm going to come back to those concepts, and we're just kind of throwing these out here. But you can see now the last child is weighted bold. And then we can also get to each of the individual items individually by going nth of type. So we want, for example, the third list item, every third list item on our web page, and we'll set the text decoration to underline. We just happen to have only one set of list items, so but the 1, 2, third item, notice it's underlined. Cool. All right, so now I've got a bunch of spans that are defined somewhere down here, and we're going to start styling those up. And we can use these special selectors to do that. For example, any span that has an attribute of title, regardless of what title is set to, then we'll set its color to black. So now let's see those that have, and you can see there's 1, 2, 3, 4 spans that we have set that each have a title attribute. Now we can even get more specific than that. For example, for those spans that have a title of first idea, then we'll set the text decoration to line through. Let's see how that impacts it. So I would expect only one of these items to have a title of first idea. As I hover over, you can see it says first idea. Okay. And let's take a look at, here's two other really complex ones. Somewhere I have an anchor tag with an href that begins with, so that's the operator for begins with the word email. So I can create an email hyperlink that when they click it, it'll automatically open up their email client and address it to the person that I put after the semicolon, or after the colon rather. So just so you can see this for yourself, I have that defined here. So ahref colon bobtaber@yahoo.com. All right, and when you click this text, it would send an email or start the process of sending an email to bobtaber@yahoo.com. All right, so let's close that back down. And I can select all anchor tags where the href, the value of the href begins with the word email. Poof, that's pretty cool, right? So I can style up that entire anchor tag and set the font size to 2em, for example. And refresh. All right, and it makes it huge, but now I could click that and send an email to myself if I really wanted to. And then I guess the last one we'll look at here is kind of along the same lines. So we'll look for the span with where the title attribute ends with, so that's the ends with operator, idea. And we'll set its text decoration to overline. And we'll save that. And I think I have two of those. I do. First idea and third idea. All right, they both end with the word idea, and so we put an overline decoration on that text. Okay, and there's several others that I just didn't take the time to incorporate into this example. Let me just pop them here on screen. There are descendants. So in this case, article span, it would select all span elements that are descendants of article, as opposed to span elements that are descendants of section or some other, you know, tag. Then there's where you can use an asterisk character, which means universal. So give me any tag within this other tag A, regardless of B's parents. Okay, and then there's, you've seen this used, the direct child, where the list item is a direct child of an unordered list. So style up those list items. And there's also for adjacent siblings and just siblings in general. And there's tons and tons of other selectors. You really need a reference of some sort, maybe a wall poster or a little cheat sheet card or something, especially as you're learning them. I'd probably encourage you to keep your CSS as simple as possible for as long as possible and only resort to some of these special cases when there's no easy way to get at it. I wouldn't be I wouldn't be poking around these hard ones because they have unintended consequences sometimes, in my experience. I try to keep things simple. My brain works that way. Okay. But at any rate, the moral of the story is that there's more than one way to attach a style to a specific element of your document. You can get really creative with especially some of the new CSS Level 3 selectors that are available. All right. One more topic I think is of extreme importance. There clearly will be collisions between styles that you've defined. There's a prescribed order in which the styles will be applied, and certain property definitions can be overridden. So if you define a style, all the children of that element will inherit the style. This applies to some styles, mostly text, font, table, and list properties. So if you take a look at, for example, a parent-child relationship where we set a style on the parent and it affected the child, take a look at our Lesson 03 example and look at the after folder where we set a style on our header section and we set the color white. Now, the header itself, its color was black, its background color was black, but now any text inside of, so any children of the header, I think there was an H1, an H2, and then there were some other, the links, but they were styled a little bit differently. But any children's text for color would be white. All right, so that's a good example of that idea. So there's a sense of inheritance, and you can also control inheritance using the following values that you see on screen. So there's inherit, which means it forces a property to be inherited from its parent that normally wouldn't be inherited, or it overrides other applied style values and it inherits the parent's value. There's also none, normal, and auto. So again, find a good reference, make sure you understand what those do and when to apply them so that you can take control of inheritance if you really want to for a given element. There's also something called important, and it gives maximum weight. In a moment, we're going to talk about the precedence of things. However, we can take something that would normally have a low precedence and bring it up very high in the chain by attaching this important off to the right-hand side of that particular style definition. So in this case, any H1 will try to really, really, really push the fact that its color, for color, is red, even if other style sheets at different levels in the process would say otherwise. Okay? And so let's go ahead and talk about cascading order. Generally, the last defined style is the one that's used, but in case of a conflict, the following order of importance is used. At the very top, the user's own style preferences, so their own style sheet, will be honored. So if I set in my web browser the font size to large, there's not a whole lot that you as a designer can do about it. I'm going to force that issue because the user will have the highest precedence. Let me jump all the way to the bottom. Will be the browser's default, so we are able to easily override the default style sheet by defining a style at any other level in between user and the browser's default. Most of what we do is with regards to either inline styles, and you can see that that has a very high precedence. There's also this importance that we just talked about a moment ago, specificity, so that means if I define a style for an ID, it will take precedence over a style that was defined just generally for that tag. So if I have an ID of some such, but I have the paragraph tag is defined even lower down in my document, the one that has specificity will override it. Next down in importance is the order of things. So we saw just a moment ago how we defined, let me see if I can find that. There was a span that had first idea and then a span that had where it ended with the word idea. And this order, the last one, has precedent over the one that was defined higher up. So as you move through your style sheet, the ones that are lower and lower have greater precedence. All right. So hopefully that made sense. It's just think in terms, something is overriding what I've done. And there's a cool tool that's built in Internet Explorer to help you see how that really works. If I were to open up my webpage one more time, and then go back to the F12 developer tools in my little tool section here, my little tool icon, it'll open up this little dialog at the very bottom of my page. And the neat thing about it is I can go to this CSS side and I can click this arrow and then start hovering my mouse cursor over things, and it starts a selection window. And when I select something, it'll show me all the styles that have been applied and the source of that style. Now in my case, I only have styles defined in this styles.css page, but if I had like four or five CSS pages, it would say where it got the style from. Okay. And you can use this on any web page over the internet to see how they did what they did. And this is the best way to learn CSS. You look at a web page, you say, wow, that's cool. I wonder how they did that. And then you spend about a half hour, an hour dissecting what they did using a tool like this. Okay, so you can see in this case, I've selected this. Notice that there are a number of styles could be applied to it. For example, the paragraph itself. But since this wasn't the first letter, it struck that out because it didn't deem that necessary, I guess. It's also regarded as important, and therefore it should be styled as red. However, we specified the span of title, which takes precedence over important because it's deeper down on the style.css page, and it set its color to black. The same is true with the span where we set the text decoration, and notice that that has a line through it because something more specific or later down in the document overwrote it. And so that's why it now has an overline. And so we can just kind of go around and inspect the various parts of our web page and learn about what takes precedence and why. And furthermore, what we can do, which is kind of cool, when we're trying to understand better how to style something and we're getting frustrated, and it's would be convenient for us to turn off or turn on styles. So I'm turning on and turning off by clicking these little check marks and saying, what would it look like if I included that or removed it? Oh, I guess I didn't need that style in the first place. How about if I remove that? Oh, that's closer to what I wanted. Or you can at least see how it affects the document in real time. Awesome debugging tool, awesome development tool, awesome learning tool. Okay, so keep in mind F12 developer tools, it's there for you to use exactly the way that we're demonstrating it here. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground in this short period of time. What's up next is looking at the types of CSS properties that can be set. I've already given you a preview of that a number of times, but now we're going to start talking about each of those, at least at a high level. There are families of properties, and I've split up the next four videos as follows. We'll talk about properties that affect the font and the text, properties that affect color and background, properties that affect lists and tables specifically, and then properties that affect block or box style HTML5 elements, and we'll talk more about what those are when we get to that point. Okay, so to wrap up, we've seen how to define styles, how to attach them to specific HTML5 elements using the CSS selector syntax. We talked about how styles are applied, how they're overridden, how they're honored through a very specific sequence and order of precedence. We've used the F12 developer tools. Man, we've learned a lot. I hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned. The hardest part is over, I promise you. It's all downhill from here. We'll see you in the next video. Thank you. Thank you.